शिवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Continuing this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 19, Text 23. Appearance of Shukadeva Goswami. It's about to happen. That is an exchange between the sages who have come at Maharaj Parikshit's request. Advise him and assist him in the preparing himself to leave in 7 days. And the set of verses we just finished yesterday, it was the sages speaking about Maharaj Parikshit's qualifications, why they had come, because of his wonderful qualifications, and they decided that they would stay until he left. And the last verse was Sutta speaking about how appropriate their words were. That all that was spoken by the great sages was very sweet to hear, full of meaning, and appropriately presented as perfectly true. So they're qualified. And now Maharaj Parikshit is going to speak about his appreciation of their qualifications. Of text 23, the king said, O great sages, you have all very kindly assembled here, having come from all parts of the universe. You are as good as supreme knowledge personified, who resides in the planet above the three worlds, Satyaloka. Consequently, you are naturally inclined to do good to others, and but for this, you have no interest, either in this life or in the next. There's lots of nice points. Read Prabhupada's purport here. Six kinds of opulences, namely wealth, strength, beauty, fame, knowledge, and renunciation, are originally the different attributes pertaining to the Absolute Personality of Godhead. The living beings, who are part and parcel entities of the Supreme Being, have all these attributes partially, up to the full strength of 78%. In the material world, these attributes, up to 78% of the Lord's attributes, are covered by the material energy, as the sun is covered by a cloud. The covered strength of the sun is very dim compared to the original glare. And similarly, the original color of the living beings with such attributes becomes almost extinct. There are three planetary systems, namely the lower worlds, the intermediate worlds, and the upper worlds. The human beings on the earth are situated at the beginning of their intermediate worlds. Living beings like Brahma and his contemporaries live in the upper worlds, of which the topmost is Satyaloka. In Satyaloka, the inhabitants are fully cognizant of Vedic wisdom, and thus, the mystic cloud of material energy is cleared. Therefore, they are known as the Vedas personified. Such persons, being fully aware of knowledge, both mundane and transcendental, have no interest in either the mundane or transcendental worlds. They are practically desireless devotees. In the mundane world, they have nothing to achieve, and in the transcendental world, they are full in themselves. Then, why do they come to the mundane world? They descend on different planets as messiahs by the order of the Lord to deliver the fallen souls. On the earth, they come down and do good to the people of the world in different circumstances, under different climatic influences. I don't know what climate exactly has to do with it. Time. They have nothing to do in this world save and except reclaim the fallen souls rotting in material existence, diluted by material energy. The Prabhupada's purports are brilliant, aren't they? Okay. The several things we'll discuss. The sages are not as qualified as Shukadeva Goswami, as highly praised as they're being praised. They're something like Jnana Mishra Bhaktas, although they're being compared to like the personified Vedas. They're like the personified Vedas because they have as their teacher Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is being identified in the verse as the supreme knowledge personified. Veda yata murti dhara. Murti dhara, having the form of, or yata, like the Vedas, having a form like the Vedas. So this is Lord Brahma. Also confirmed that his abode is Tri-Prishte, is above the three planetary systems. So lower, intermediate, and upper. And Satyaloka is at the topmost of the upper planetary systems, and therefore has this, at least in this verse, is being called beyond the three planetary systems. That's Satyaloka. And the residents of Satyaloka, Lord Brahma resides in Satyaloka, and he presides over Satyaloka. And that means the persons who are in Satyaloka develop, they're qualified just to take their birth there, and in his presence they develop knowledge like he has. And in this position of knowledge like he has, they're detached. Jnana Vairagya. With that knowledge, they're detached from things of this world, and they're detached from things of the other world. That's what's being said specifically here. Nehatma Namurtra Cha Kashchanartha. They're not interested in things of this world, Iha, and that world, the other world. Mutra. They're detached. They're, in other words, they're self-satisfied, as is the position of an elevated soul or liberated soul, practically. They're satisfied within, and so if Krishna puts me here, Krishna puts me there, it's fine. Provided, as long as I can be engaged in Krishna's service, I can be in my relationship with Krishna, then I can be anywhere. being in my relationship with Krishna, because that's what's important to me. The other is whatever Krishna wants. So then Prabhupada raises the question and answers it. If they have that detached position, being so filled with knowledge, the form of knowledge, why would they come here? These sages are being likened to the... So why have they come? His answer is they've come as messiahs. Now that's a Christian word. And I remember one time Rupanuga was really good at asking good questions of Srila Prabhupada. And he would do it in person, and sometimes he would do it in letters, and he would share his letters with us. He was our GBC for a while in New York. So he wrote Prabhupada a letter. Saw the letter that he sent, I saw the reply. He asked Prabhupada, what happens, what's the destination of the soul for a perfect Christian? Sometimes we're asked that question. So Prabhupada's answer was something to the effect was if there were such a thing as a perfect Christian, meaning where do you find one? But were there such a thing as a perfect Christian, the destination would be Satyaloka, where they would get the opportunity to associate with Lord Brahma and possibly achieve the kingdom of God in their next life. That's interesting, isn't it? But it makes sense, because the teaching that Christ gave had a lot to do with moralities, and it also mixed with the moralities was love God. So in other places Prabhupada said that Christ was a Vaishnava, because he taught worship of the Supreme God. Monotheism was his teaching. One Supreme God, and therefore within the Judeo and Christian section of the world there's strong appreciation, or let's say fidelity, for the teachings of Krishna consciousness. When we explain our teachings to people, they don't listen very carefully, and they say, oh, that sounds just like my teachings. If we just explain principles. And it's true, it's Vaishnava teaching. But it's mixed. It's mixed with karma and gyan. Mixed with, I want to achieve heaven. So that's not Satyaloka, that's heaven, is Swargaloka. So, more likely, a really good Christian would attain Swargaloka, heaven. But a perfect Christian, which was the Rupanuga's question, would achieve the association of Lord Brahma. Which fits in with what Prabhupada is saying here, that why do such persons situated in Brahmaloka come to this world? They come as messiahs. From Brahmaloka to this realm as messiahs. As Christ was appreciated as a messiah. He's not explicitly making that connection, but by language he's inferring it. And what's their interest when they come? Well, they teach the same thing they learned from Lord Brahma in Brahmaloka. Like, be detached from worldly things. At least my experience is the Christian world is not really good at being detached from worldly things. In fact, it's not even so much an emphasis, it's kind of the other emphasis. Enjoy religiously, instead of be detached. But the message is be detached. Be attached in a theistic way to proper conduct, and be detached from being an enjoying spirit. But that's not the case. That's not the practical exercise. And therefore such persons, the destination of such persons is quite uncertain from a Vedic perspective. And back to the sages, they were highly qualified. They were Maharaj Parikshit is identifying them as, again, Veda, Yatha, Murti Dhara. They're like a form of personified Vedas. So in the Satyaloka, Lord Brahma presides, but those who associate with him are like personified Vedas. Now that's not the same. The personified Vedas are also described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, where Lord Brahma is brought before the Supreme Lord Vishnu in chapter 9. He has his epiphany, his realization. The spiritual world appears before his eyes, and he enters into that spiritual world, and when he enters deep within the spiritual world, he sees the Yogpith, the place where Lord Vishnu is seated on his throne, and surrounding him are so many personalities in this spiritual dimension, and amongst those are the personified Vedas. So personified Vedas reside in the spiritual world, and there are persons who are like the personified Vedas who reside in Brahmaloka, and the sages are like those who reside in Brahmaloka, who are like those who reside in the spiritual world. So that Prabhupada is using this comparison to the sun being covered by a cloud, living entity being covered by nescience. The sun, the comparison is the sun is intense brilliance, but when, from our perspective, we see the sun covered by a cloud. It's hardly been summer here. It's been like England or something. Maybe it'll change as soon as I leave, but oh, so much cloud cover. When we had our little JBC meeting in London, it was sunny for a day, about a day and a quarter. And one local devotee I saw when walking around the pond at the Bhaktivedanta Manor said, "This countryside, when the sun is shining, is one of the most beautiful places in the world." And the rest of the day was raining. They were still having weddings. There were five weddings in 2 days. At the Bhaktivedanta Manor, is a very popular place for weddings. In the rain, in a tent. I don't know why they... Anyway. Pay money to go have a wedding in the rain, in tent. But Bhaktivedanta Manor is very popular. So they... Part of the little thing is before the deities, and then they go into the tent. Anyway. When the living entity is similarly covered like the sun, the metaphor is important because the sun has its natural brilliance. It's not that the sun can become covered. Who can cover the sun? But from our vision, we cannot see the sun, so it appears to be covered. Same with the living entity. The living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. So the part and parcel has qualities like Krishna. So this capacity for knowledge is an inherent capacity. We'll say it the other way around. Real knowledge is not something that you get from outside yourself. Real knowledge is something that's already within inside yourself. And it just needs to be excavated. Svatak Siddha Gyan is a term of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Svatak Siddha Gyan. Svatak means it's your own, it's self, it's within yourself. Siddha Gyan, perfectional stage of knowledge is already within. And the process of hearing is it resonates with that original knowledge that's already within, and that original original knowledge awakens, because it's dormant, like a seed. And it's dormant, and you sprout the seed by water and soil, keep it moist, and some light, and slowly the seed sprouts. So slowly, the spiritual knowledge that's inherent within the living being can be awakened. And the uncovered state, or not covered state, or the enlightened state, as with these sages, is they have heard from qualified persons, as the residents of Brahmaloka have heard from Lord Brahma, and therefore they're like personified Vedas. So Maharaj Prichit is appreciating their association, because they've come. Why have they come? They're messiahs. They've come because, not because they have an interest in anything mundane or even anything extra mundane or beyond the mundane. They're interested in one thing. They're interested in doing good for others. That's a nice thing to be interested in. But to be able to do good for others, you have to know who the others are. Meaning you have to have spiritual knowledge. We'll go to the one of the repeating themes, like a refrain in the Ishopanishad, that it's necessary to be interested in the welfare of all. There has to be a spiritual conception. And in this world, generally, there's not a spiritual conception, or there's a misconception of what is spiritual. And so being a philanthropist or an altruist or this ism or that ism, the whole host of isms is misdirected. And unfortunately, people expect the Hare Krishna movement or any religious movement to be like that, to be philanthropists and altruists and do-gooders on the material platform. And we've all heard it. What do you do to help people? Oh, you're part of some religion. What do you do to help people? In other words, the expectation is, it's been, by mundane conception, it's been reduced to, we're a social welfare organization. That's what a good religion does, is you help people on the bodily platform. You save the coat of the drowning man. That's what you're supposed to do. And if you don't do that, I mean, they say explicitly, okay, you know, you have some nice teachings, yeah, that's good. You have some nice deity worship, yeah, that's good. What do you do to help people? I was sitting once in Mayapur with I gathered from the conversation with the person, a wealthy individual. You know, that big hall, that's like, you know, I don't know how many people they can sit, hundreds and hundreds of people, that giant hall in Mayapur, sitting, taking prasadam. He sat down, he got served, and he was leaning over and said, so, what do you do to help people? I've been around your campus here, and I've seen the big deities, and I saw your school. But what do you do to help people? You know, excuse me, but delivering the soul from the clutches of birth and death is helping people. Well, you know, that's your religious view, but what do you do to help people? I said, oh, okay, I know I know where you're coming from. So I can tell you, we have our Food for Life program. And I'll tell you the midday meals, how many people we're serving, and, you know, oh, okay, so now you're helping people, that's nice. You know, the other is, it's incidental. The real good thing you're doing is you're helping people. That's good. And I described other things that they're doing around Mayapur with medical care and finding jobs for people and cottage industries, and, oh, okay, you're helping people, okay. because there's no concept. They can't relate to something that is transcendental. Now the sages that are visiting Maharaj Parikshit, they have no interest in the mundane, and they have only interest in the transcendental. So then what's their purpose in coming? To do good for others. Rite means save and accept. So Prabhupada has translated it. Para, they're interested in the transcendental benefit of others. Anugraham atmashilam. Anugraham is doing good to. Anugraham, doing good to others. Atmashilam, coming out of their own nature. It's like, you know, the nature of the soul. Because what's the nature of the soul? To serve. And when you're serving, when you're in the right platform of service, it's not to get something. That's the contamination. Fruitive. I do this because I want that. So who does something if you don't want something? It's not of this world. There is no such thing in this world of people that do something that don't want something. But the sages didn't do anything because they wanted something. They only did things simply to do good to others, to do service unto others. And Maharaj Parikshit is appreciating. Why have you come? Just to do good for me. You're being kind to me. They're saying, we've come because you're such a qualified person, we want to be with you. And he's saying, I understand your qualification. You've only come to do good for me. As devotees, like, you know, we're not at the stage of Maharaj Parikshit and the sages, but as devotees, we should learn the art of appreciating. And one part of the art of appreciating is appreciating, but another part of the art is how to respond when someone appreciates. It gets real tricky. If you're in false ego, it's like impossible. Because it's either then I get puffed up, or it's no, 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 no. Like, you know, keep that away. A very elevated soul, Maharaj Parikshit did not say, yes, 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 you're right. You're so learned people, I can understand you're so learned because you understand my qualifications. Not doing that. And he's not saying, no, 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 no. He's saying in a very graceful way, I accept the words that you're saying, simply you're saying it because you want to do good for me. I accept your kindness. I'm eager to accept your kindness because you just want to do, you want to instruct me how I should be like. This is very nice. And you're doing like that for one reason only. You're not like flattering, you know, pumping me up. You're not doing that. You're being kind to me. Because in your quality is there's nothing else within you. It's something, I'll say it again, it's something as we go along in devotional service and, you know, hopefully make a little advancement in devotional service. This is a nice art to learn, how with devotees that are also, you know, progressing a little bit in their spiritual lives, that you can honor them and you don't go get back a no, no, no. They can get back another transcendental honoring of the other person, receiving and exchanging appreciation for one another in a nice way. It can go the other way also. It can be like we find in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where the honor that goes to a particular devotee, he deflects by saying, here's my disqualifications, but if you want to know who is a really great and worthy of honor devotee, go see so-and-so. They're really a qualified devotee. So just praising another. In this case, Maharaj Parikshit is praising those who have just praised him. And when you read Srimad Bhagavatam, and there are these kinds of exchanges, I recommend, read carefully how those exchanges take place, so that you can learn how to learn that art yourself. I mean, it's not like one phrase, one response fits all circumstances. But learn the art of it. A very nice section, really nice section, where this goes on is when Swayambhuva Manu visits Karma Muni. The praise that goes back and forth between the two is so nice. Here's Karma Muni off in a forest. He is so qualified that the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, personally came riding on the back of Garuda and offered him a benediction that you will have as a son the personality of Godhead. A form of myself will become your son. And here he is just like off in the wilderness. You please me so much. So he already knows this is the plan of the Lord. And way off into the wilderness comes the emperor of the universe, Swayambhuva Manu. And when he sees Swayambhuva Manu off in this wilderness situation, he immediately understands there's some plan of the Lord, and I accept. Whatever it is, because it's the plan of the Lord. You've come for some reason, and whatever the reason is, the answer is yes. You are my king. You are my protector. I honor you for that service that you're doing. And because you've come for some purpose, yes, this is the plan of the Lord. Somehow you've come. And immediately Swayambhuva Manu offers his profuse praise of Karma Muni. You're such a qualified brahmana, this way, that way, this way, that way. And there's this very rich, very thick respect. Prabhupada comments in one purport, this is where we have can have elevation within society when the brahmana and the kshatriya hold genuine respect for one another. The phrase he uses is brahmacharya. There's respect. Because, things break down is it's a bit disrespect. I'm a brahmana. So, you're down there and I'm up here. Or, I'm the king. What do you do? You sit and read books. You have nothing. Who are you? Or whatever are the disparaging words that are attitudes that are held. That's the opposite of what will lead to elevation of society. When we have different capacities, and with those different capacities we have different roles to play. And when there's respect for another's role to play, and we genuinely appreciate it, and we express our appreciation, and our actions match our words, not just empty words, but our actions match our words, and vice versa, then society can be very dynamic, very progressive, very elevated. And the Bhagavatam is teaching us how to do this if we read it properly. It's there from very qualified people, and we're not qualified people, but we'd like to become qualified, so they're teaching us how to do that. And to step back a couple of steps. And as mentioned yesterday, the theme here is, who's qualified to receive Srimad Bhagavatam and who's qualified to deliver it? So the sages are appreciating Maharaj Parikshit's qualification to receive Srimad Bhagavatam. And how Maharaj Parikshit responds to the sages proves it, how qualified he is. He's just been praised and praised and praised, and he turns it right around, and it's, you're just doing good for me, because you're so qualified. You have no interest of anything, this world or the other world, and yet you've come. It's like Grandfather Bhishma and his appreciation of Krishna. I fought on the opposite side of the Pandavas, but the Pandavas have come here, and Krishna has come here. Why? He's just kind. He's Bhaktivatsala. I thought I was going to kill his dearmost friend. Here he comes. Just to fulfill my desire with my very eyes to see his form as I leave my body. Krishna is so kind. And his tears are streaming down his cheeks in appreciation of Krishna's kindness. He's so moved. Although his body is racked with pain, he's just lifted above that by his transcendental love for Krishna. And so many nice scenes. They're inspirational, but they're not just inspirational. They're instructive of where our attention should go and how we should conduct ourselves in a host of situations. Very, very valuable. If we take it, Srimad Bhagavatam, in that way, it's training. Shrinvanti, Gayanti, Grinanti, Sadavaha. That's the instruction of Narada to Vyas. That this message, even if it's irregularly composed and there's flaws in the grammar and composition, the message is very powerful. And the message can completely change our lives if heard properly. Completely change our lives. It's so powerful. And what are the qualifications for hearing properly? We're being instructed. Just to amplify that, the sages who are something like Gyan Mishra Bhaktas, how much openness of heart does Maharaj Parikshit have for their association, then what to speak of Shukadeva Goswami and the message of the Bhagavatam. He's a fit recipient of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and for that reason Shukadeva Goswami was sent by Krishna just to deliver Srimad Bhagavatam to this wonderful recipient. And amongst the sages who were assembled there, there's Suta Goswami, who heard and then repeated, having assimilated that message. So this is the way of getting value in our lives from reading Srimad Bhagavatam on a regular basis. On a regular basis, these qualities can become our qualities if we read in a receptive and attentive and a thoughtful mood. It's instruction for us to come to that qualified stage. That's what it's intended to do. And the door of the kingdom of God is wide open, waiting for us to go there and be provided. Okay. Any comments or questions? Yes.
So, Maharaj, I heard that when somebody falls from the spiritual world to the earthly planets, he doesn't directly come, but he first comes to the Satya Loka and then gradually falls down. Is that right?
Prabhupada said that on several occasions, so I would accept that it's right.
So Maharaj, when somebody is in the
Satya Loka position, why would they fall further?
Yeah, because and now we are saying that they come as messiahs to uplift the fallen souls.
That's The living entity has free will in all circumstances of life. So that free will can be manifest this way or that way. So one of the positions is this way, another is that way. In contact with the material world, how many messiahs are there compared to how many fallen souls are there? It's a very disproportionate ratio. Therefore, contact with the material world is treacherous, even in Brahmaloka. Even if one has lots of knowledge, and you have great association, the material world is treacherous. We have free will, and the tendency to misuse it, once in contact with matter, is very strong. And we're not in Brahmaloka, so what to speak of our position? Treacherous. We have a wonderful opportunity. Like Prabhupada once said, don't be surprised when somebody leaves Krishna consciousness, be surprised when somebody stays. Because it's a very dangerous position. We should make every effort to assist the devotees to stay in Krishna consciousness. But it's very special when someone comes, and it's very, very special when someone progressively moves towards Krishna. And if we don't progressively move towards Krishna, you know what happens? Prabhupada gave an explanation. There are two things, not three things. Either you're progressing or you're regressing. And there's no standing still. Standing still means regressing, because the force of the material energy is very strong. Like being in the midst of the Ganges treading water. While the Ganges is moving swiftly downstream, you're downstream. So complacency doesn't work. But Krishna consciousness is dynamic. So it requires, emphasize it again, it requires that we strive to progress. And if we're not striving, let's say chanting, we're not striving to improve our chanting, then the quality of the chanting is going to regress. We need to strive to improve the quality of our chanting. Continuously strive, or continually strive to the goal, to reach Krishna. But even from Brahmaloka, what to speak of our present position? Yes, Hare Krishna. Welcome back.
Our desire to serve Krishna, sometimes how to balance that, to be, I have a strong desire for in Krishna conscious activity. And yes, I desire very strongly, but situations come in such a way that I don't see that probably now. And I'm just concerned that is the strong desire, is there a chance that it turns into back into revolting nature?
Revolting nature? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I mean,
turn away from Krishna nature?
No, I mean, revolting in the sense, I have a strong desire, I want this to happen, this is in Krishna conscious activity, I want to serve Guru, Sadhu, Shastra in that order. But I see activities that happen to me is, it's like, it's not happening right now. So
why you can't serve? In any circumstance, even if it's an adverse circumstance. The dilemma sounds like, not sure, but it sounds like, I want to serve this way, and Krishna is giving you that way instead of this way to serve. That's fine. It's fine to have a plan this way, and it's also fine that Krishna gives that way instead of this way, and it's also fine that you take that way as Krishna's way to serve him, and you serve him.
And at times our situations are the other way, that, okay, so I go with this is Krishna's plan,
Okay.
But
is there a chance that I have not acted?
There's a chance. You can leave that, you know, some space in your creative imagination that says, or, you know, your contemplation of circumstances that says, maybe this isn't Krishna's plan for me. Well, let me, but, you know, it appears that it's Krishna's plan for me. So let me go down the path of serving what appears to be Krishna's plan for me, fully willing to go to that which is really Krishna's plan for me, because I got the wrong signal. About 20 years ago, I wrote an essay about making choices, because we all have to make choices. And one of the choices is choices of service. So, you know, we do our best, we consult and so on, and we're at a fork in the road. Now, should I go this way or that way? And indecision is itself a decision. I have to make a decision. So sometimes it's appropriate to wait, but sometimes you have to act. You know, a car's coming down the road and you have to act. If you stay where you are, you're squished. So you got to act. You have to do something. Something is timely. It needs to be done. So then if at that point you're still not clear, move in that which seems to be Krishna's plan, being fully ready to be completely detached from that, ready to do, but make, you know, let it be not, avoid getting on the mental platform and, you know, you're ping-pong balling back and forth between this and that and you're nowhere except on the mental platform. Be firm in the direction you're moving in, at the same time be ready to be completely detached from that as a clear signal, not one from the mind, but a clear signal comes. That's not what Krishna wants.
My real question is, it's still okay to continue with the desire to...
Well, let's say King Chitraketu. It was a desire you should have let go of. There are circumstances you just let go of because it's clear that Krishna doesn't want it. You let go of it. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes what Krishna wants is for you to let go of it. And then he gives you that thing. I learned that in my first month of devotional service living in a temple. When you surrender to Krishna, you surrender on his terms. And when you do that, Krishna is very pleased. And he may very well give you what you wanted, but then it's because he wanted it. And with some detachment from your side. Whatever Krishna wants. That's what Krishna wants.
Yeah, you know, in one of the lectures in Hyderabad, you did mention about this four, stay tuned, Krishna's radio.
Yeah. So, the Krishna channel.
The channel.
Radio Krishna. Anything else?
Yeah. You mentioned they're not interested in worldly things, nor are they interested in the other worldly things. Like they're not interested in the heavenly worldly things? Or?
They're not. It's the upper, here's the language. The Sanskrit is iha, in this world, and thereafter, the other world. Mutra. So Prabhupada has translated it as neither this life nor the next life. In the translation. And in the purport he's speaking of the material world and the transcendental world. Now devotees want to be with Krishna. But you can be with Krishna whether you're in this world or the transcendental world. If you're in devotion to Krishna, Krishna will manifest himself attracted by the devotion of the devotee. So the idea is, such persons are not concerned with what is my situation, loka standi, Prabhupada would use the phrase. Am I here or there? Am I in Seattle or am I in India? Am I in this realm or that realm? There's only one thing. May I please have your service. Shikshastakam, right?
Jnanam Ishtapatmas. Now they are not really pure.
Well, so they had Sukadeva Goswami's association.
How do we check a person's progression?
How do we check to see if someone is perfect in Krishna consciousness? You just hook them up to a perfect Krishna conscious meter, and if it goes to 10, then you got it. No. Well, what does Rupa Goswami teach us? Anyabhilashita shanyam. You know the verse? Jnana karma dhyanavratam adukoyena krishna anushilanam. So perfect in Krishna consciousness, by Rupa Goswami's definition, even one who is striving in the sadhana bhakti stage, striving, that's perfection. It's another perspective of what perfection is, but it's his definition. It's the core definition of the whole nectar devotion. Very important verse. Where someone may be here practicing sadhana bhakti, they understand clearly what the goal is. They have no envy towards the goal or those who have achieved the goal. Rather, they're aspiring for the association of those who have achieved the goal, even though they're down here. And they're practicing. Practice means it's not perfect yet, but they're striving by right means. So it's like, let me ask you, which is a tulsi plant? Which is the true tulsi plant? One that has all manjaris and, you know, very nice leaves all over? Or a little seedling that's just boop, popped through the surface of the earth, the soil? Or the little seed? All of them. It's just different stages of development. They're all true tulsi plants. Just at different stages. Or tulsi. Tulsi seed, tulsi sprout, so on. So same, our devotional service can be said, by Rupa Goswami's definition, perfect if, even in the practicing stage, if we're cultivating anushilana, we're cultivating this, let me become freed from this and that, and let me take shelter only of following the means that's being provided. That's perfection. It's the seedling stage or immature stage of perfection. Okay. Aditi, what's your question this morning? Don't.
You said today she didn't understand most of it.
Oh. Maybe you're still giddy from getting out of school. Maybe having your summer vacation start. Okay. Yeah?
Maharaj, in the first given all, that one must be patient and enthusiastic. And are they more for neophytes or
no? How they'll manifest in the neophyte stage is different than how they'll manifest in the mature stage. But the principles apply to all stages.
Yeah. Compared to Krishna, like 16 years in the spiritual world, does it mean like his childhood pastimes are only manifested in the material world?
No, that statement is he doesn't become older then, but the childhood pastimes are also there. Now how that works, I don't know. Because time is very elastic in the spiritual world, because it's eternal. So there's the appearance of things. There's the appearance of the passage of time. To have events, you have to have time. In the spiritual world, time is noticeable by its absence. But you still have events. So how it works is part of the mystery of Krishna's internal potency. But there's childhood pastimes. And the pastimes of Krishna and Braj. But there's quadrants. Nadandam, and there's
Mathura and there's Dwarka. The Krishna's pastimes are the ages, so to speak, of his pastimes. And different inclinations towards love for Krishna in those different moods of those different places. So according to one's love for Krishna, he manifests his form and his pastimes. Anything else? Thank you very much, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.